Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Bill and Drew right now here in the studio. Dan is headed over to the football complex. There is another viewing window for the media to watch Auburn football practice for a half an hour or so at the bottom of this hour. So he'll be heading over there. He'll be checking in with us as he has the last couple of weeks. So for the third straight week, Hugh Freeze allowing the media to watch a little bit of practice. I think today a lot of the viewing is just going to be seeing who is out there, who is able to get around. Auburn, you know, has some guys banged up. And there are a couple of players we still haven't seen. You know, Nehemiah Pritchett practiced last week, did not play, has not played yet this year. And it's pretty amazing how well Auburn has done defensively. Young Kayan Lee, the true freshman, has gotten the start and played well in his first two collegiate games. But Auburn, you know, some other guys banged up. Wonder about the status of Larry Nixon after Austin Keys went down and turned out had a broken thumb and will be out for a while. Don't know exactly when he'll be back. Larry Nixon banged up in last week's game. And Auburn, that's a very thin position for the Tigers there at linebacker. So anyway, Dan will be checking in here shortly, and we'll talk with him before he heads into practice. Then Andy Burcham, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, will be joining the show for a couple of segments. And then in the 5 o'clock hour, Dan will check back in following the media viewing period. We also have, we have some audio that we could play for you as well. Thought we might do that in the 5 o'clock hour when Dan is making his way back toward the studio, because yesterday, following Hugh Freeze meeting with the media, Eugene Asante came in and spent some time with the press. So if we get a chance, we'll run some of Eugene, the SEC Defensive Player of the Week, who's had two excellent ball games and really was just seemed like he was there on every play, it seemed like, defensively, was all over the field at linebacker for Auburn the other day. So if we get a chance, we will run that for you as well. Just getting underway here on the Tuesday Drive. Man, the day after, man, the highly publicized debut of Aaron Rodgers with the Jets ends in 75 seconds last night as he goes down. And it turns out, yes, indeed, he does have a torn Achilles and will be out for the season. So the Jets did win in spite of that. I'll say honestly, I didn't watch the second half. It was not the most exciting game that I was watching. I thought, well, I'd check back in. And the Jets do win it in overtime, much to the chagrin of a lot of patrons at a Green Bay bar that had said that and they have this for the rest of the year when the Jets are not playing at the same time as the Packers. If the Jets lose, the drinks are on the house. And there were quite a few folks in the establishment last night who were cheering against the Jets. And hopefully they didn't want Aaron Rodgers to be hurt badly. But they were pretty excited because they felt like they were going to get free drinks when he went down with an injury. And quite a few tabs were run up, and then the Jets pulled it out in overtime. So good for the bar, not so good for the patrons. But, I mean, it's a great, great promotion. But now it feels a little funny since there won't be any Aaron Rodgers with the Jets. All right. We'd love for you to join in. If you didn't get a chance to get in yesterday, love for you to join in with your thoughts on, you know, this past weekend, obviously Auburn Cal, but any of the games from this past weekend. Do you feel like you know? So, I mean, we've seen that most teams can handle far inferior competition, but I don't know what we really know about a lot of teams in the Southeastern Conference and around the country. So we'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390, or you can text us on the Drive text box, which is brought to you by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. That number, 334-564-1840. Anything on your mind sports-wise, looking ahead? I mean, it's homecoming this week, 6 o'clock kick as Auburn hosting the Samford Bulldogs. We'll now check in. I believe Dan is headed over toward the complex and ready to join in here for a little while. Dan, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Checking in from on campus now as we again. It's so cool that we get in season practice windows, right? Like when was? I mean, this is something that's just.
I would say 2009, maybe.
Were we going to practice then? During the season in 09?
I mean, maybe once or twice. No, probably before then. May have been 2007, 6 or 7 with Tubbs. May have been the last time.
I remember a lot of preseason access right. with Tubbs, especially.
Well, we get those viewing windows that were much briefer than the ones we're getting now, where you'd just be able to see who's out there as they stretched and warmed up. They usually were practicing at different times. They'd either be later. Remember a lot of those practices started at 6.
I remember being able to go to a lot of preseason and spring stuff, but not so much in season during the Tuberville era. And it's really, really cool. And I want to get back to, you know, the point is I really appreciate the access we're getting from the university throughout the Hugh Freeze era, right? Like, I think it's been whether it's been players on Monday after Hugh Freeze gives us time at the press conference, a viewing window, all the access we got during the off season, Bill. I think it's been it's been really nice to be able to see as much as we've been able to see.
Oh yeah, I mean it's quite a change. Like you said, I mean it's been a long time. Been well over. It's probably been, you know, over 15 years. And back then we didn't even get. If we did, like I said, it was very brief, and we didn't get to see really much of the practices at all. So it is. Very much appreciated. You're absolutely right.
So I'm going to be, I guess I'm going to be looking to see who's working at the first team at a couple of spots. Xavier Miller would be, you know, a guy that we've been paying attention to a lot on these Tuesday windows. And I think the offensive line is, again, one of the spots. I'm going to be curious to see what they're doing at wide receiver. Right, Bill?
Oh, yeah, I would think. I mean, after the talk yesterday that, you know, he's still looking for somebody to step up besides 5 and 6, or look and see if 5 and 6 are out there at the same time. That's the other thing.
Are they working 6 more outside and keeping 5 where he is?
I would think 5 is more likely to be outside. I think Jay Fair is a little stronger physically, and that's a guy that would be more likely to be able to get off some press coverage than Javarius.
I could even see, you know, I could see them both working outside in situations where they like Rivaldo inside and they want to have maybe a tight end on the field other than Rivaldo. Like, I could see scenarios. So maybe they're going to work both of them outside and we're going to, you know, they're going to pick and choose. I mean, it again, not to harp on it, but yesterday I was struck at the press conference by the way Hugh Freeze, you know, he's not punting on the other group of receivers, but he's acknowledging that two guys have established themselves as far more reliable than the rest of the room.
Yeah, he didn't say they're playing the best right now. He said we 5 and 6 need more touches. They're our best receivers. flat.
Right.
I mean,
when I asked him, and I asked him flat out about the rest of the room, right? And he says, you know, I haven't seen it from the other guys. Like they need to do it. You'd hope. I think he said, you know, when I asked if he's expecting more production from the other receivers as well, you know, he said, well, you hope so, certainly, but you know, he can only go by what he's seen so
right.
far, and what it sounds like he's seen is a pair of receivers who were on last year's team. You know, it's worth pointing that out too. Tavarius Johnson and Jay Fair are two guys that Hugh Freeze inherited, and they seem to have established themselves as clearly ahead of the rest of that group. And I mean, like you said, maybe not just at the moment, maybe in the eyes of this coaching staff moving forward.
And the thing that folks need to keep in mind, and that's I couldn't see, you know, watching on television, you can't see the whole field sometime, and you wonder what's going on downfield. And that's why, you know, we asked about the, you know, taking some shots downfield. I've talked to a couple of more folks who were there, and they said maybe once or twice somebody looked open more than 8-10 yards downfield, but they sure didn't notice many times when there appeared to be, you know, oh, you need to get the ball downfield to this, you know, to this receiver or the other. Said they just either seemed to be tied up or just not involved in the play.
You're going to talk to somebody else who was at the game in about 15 minutes, and I listened to the second half of the radio call. I think Jason multiple times mentioned that the receivers were not getting open in man-to-man. I believe Hugh Freeze pointed it out
mm-hmm.
both at halftime and in the post-game press conference as well. So I'm not sure. Yeah, I would be surprised if the diagnosis is that the receivers are getting open and the quarterbacks need to do more. It sounds like our guys are not winning their matchups consistently enough in the eyes of Hugh Freeze at that position, with the exception of Jay Fair and Tavarius Johnson.
Yeah, and you mentioned Izavian Miller. I mean, that's going to be interesting to see. He has, you know, he's been the main character at right tackle. He's played the most snaps at right tackle through the first two games. Gunnar Britton had been listed as the starter in the opening game, although he played more at left guard than he did right tackle. But it'll be interesting to see if they make any changes or they just stick. And again, as we were saying yesterday, it's not like that anyone would punt on Izavian Miller, because they really, really like his potential, his talent out there. He's a guy that has less experience, really, than the other players, especially at the Power 5 level.
I don't have the numbers right in front of me. I believe Gunnar Britton played every snap on offense for Auburn against Cal.
Mm-hmm.
I think Izavian played about 40 to 45 plays. Jeremiah Wright played about a dozen, and I believe included in that dozen for Jeremiah, he played left guard on the touchdown drive at the end of the game. Gunnar Britton was at right tackle in that series. So I wonder if that's your new first team on offense based on how the coaching staff used them in crunch time. It's interesting they went with Jeremiah in that position, but I mean, he's been playing more than Tate Johnson when they go to a reserve guard. But if it's not Izavian, I would think it's Gunnar Britton at right tackle, Jeremiah Wright at left guard.
Yeah, so that'll be something to keep an eye on. I was also mentioning linebackers. I mean, with Larry Nixon getting banged up a little, you know, you hope he's out there at practice today, because Auburn's getting pretty thin at that position with Austin Keys already out for a while.
Sounds like Steiner has moved his way back into a position where, and maybe it's out of necessity, but Wesley Steiner was out there on a lot. I mean, especially after the Nixon injury, Wesley Steiner was out there on defense, and I would imagine if you can't have Keys or Keys and Nixon both being unavailable, I mean, it's got to be Steiner or Riley, but I would imagine you'd see both of them depending on the status of Larry Nixon.
Yeah. So those are some of the things that you'll be watching for today. I would guess you're not going to really get an awful lot out of what you see with the quarterbacks, because we know that, I mean, it's been Peyton Thorne and Robbie Ashford, and then seeing either one of them out there. I doubt they're going to, you know, rotate them, you know, much in practice today. Give them, I guess we'll find out.
You know, I'm still sort of waiting on the Keldrick Faulk moment, right? And so it's been two games, and he's played sparingly. Nasila Kite played a lot on Saturday night. And so, yeah, I wonder if...
Yeah, I didn't see... You're right. We didn't see nearly as much as of Keldrick.
Yeah, and I wonder if maybe Samford is... I wonder, first of all, how serious the injury was that slowed him down in fall practice. He missed one of the scrimmages, right? And coach talked about thinking, you know, he didn't really go into specifics about the injury, but seems like they're still easing Keldrick Faulk into the rotation, and maybe Samford is a chance for him to get a lot of playing time.
Yeah, you would sure think that we'll see a lot of number 15 this week, and hopefully. Go ahead.
If he's healthy, right? If he's healthy and they're not worried about overtaxing him.
Oh, that's true. I was about to say, I mean, you would hope that with an opponent like Samford, Auburn can get out there and just be able to overmatch them and be able to get some, you know, get some good playing time for a lot of players. Answering questions, though, as they go along. I mean, they do need to try to figure exactly the lineup they're going to have there up front, how they're going to worked quarterbacks. I was really intrigued by Hugh Freeze's responses to those questions about the quarterback usage yesterday, too. He didn't seem like he was happy the way things went, but with turnovers and the inability to sustain drives, it made it tougher to have, you know, an extended period for either quarterback, it looked like.
Hugh Freeze is careful not to put blame on one person necessarily. I think he was playing some defense there. He doesn't want people blaming Robbie or Peyton for the offensive performance on Saturday night. And, you know, how they use the quarterbacks going forward remains to be seen. I wonder if we see more Peyton Thorne on third and short and more Robbie, you know, on special occasions. If Peyton Thorne can't be more productive, maybe we see Robbie a lot more. I don't know how that's going to play out, but he's careful. He knows how things are gonna resonate in the locker room, and I think he answers questions accordingly. When you talk to Andy, Bill, ask him about Asante. That's a star-making performance Saturday night, and then I thought he was really, really good at the press conference yesterday too.
Yeah, I wish I'd been able to be there. I had to leave and didn't get a chance to hear that. I've read some of the comments that he made, but yes, he has handled himself so well and has played so well here, leading the team in tackles the first two games.
Yeah, I think Andy was in the back of the room yesterday for Eugene Asante, and he's just, yeah, it's a cool story of a guy who was had to pick himself back up. He was down last season, and here he is. It's easy to forget. Was a Power Five recruit coming out of high school from a North Carolina guy that, or a Washington D.C. guy that went to North Carolina, mm-hmm. had multiple Power Five offers. He's making good on that potential, and he was so vital to what Auburn did Saturday night on defense.
Oh no, he made so many big plays. I mean, just because a play wasn't necessarily a sack or a tackle for loss, he made plays when Auburn really needed him to make plays. So yeah, well, Andy's here. I will check with him, get his thoughts on that and much more. Dan, I know it's about time for you to head on in and see what you can watch there at the viewing window.
Absolutely. Give my best to Andy, as always. A phenomenal job. I told him off the air when I saw him yesterday over on campus, but I want to make sure I say it on the air too. Andy and Jason were phenomenal on Saturday night. Will as well. Don't want to sell anybody short. But that was a great call Saturday night of a wild, memorable game. And I'm glad some of the guys that were there for USC in 2002 got to win one in California, right? Cadillac,
oh,
Jason.
Yeah.
I think Andy was on that trip. I could be wrong. I forget if Andy was there in Los Angeles. But for folks who were there in 2002, they get to go back in California and pick one up.
Yep. All right, Dan, enjoy the viewing window, and we're ready for the report afterwards.
Absolutely. Talk to you guys soon.
All right. We'll get to our first break here of the Tuesday Drive. The voice of the Tigers joins me here in the studio. Love for you too. Marcus, hang on. You'll be up as well when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
My joints aren't with
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody doing well. Marcus, if you get a chance, give us a call back. 334-321-1390. Right now, though, we welcome in the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham. Andy, welcome back. How was the trip to California?
It was a good trip. It was a good trip. I always like going someplace new.
Yeah.
And I've been to that area before, a couple times doing women's basketball down at Stanford. So I've been to that Bay Area, but never to that side of the Bay. Oakland, Berkeley. And we stayed in San Mateo. The team stayed in San Mateo, which is right next to the San Francisco airport. So still on the other side of the bay, and then went over for the game. And Berkeley is beautiful. That campus is gorgeous. The stadium is a great setting with a canyon on one side.
It's 100 years old.
It is. With a canyon on one side, and then you look out over the bay out the other side of the press box. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And the weather was fabulous.
Everybody I've talked to that went said it was a great time.
There were tons of Auburn people there. And many just took advantage of being on the West Coast. They were there for more than just the game. Obviously, the game is what brought them there.
Oh, sure. I think most people made it an extended.
Napa, Pebble Beach, Spyglass Hill.
The Giants game.
Yeah, Giants game, San Francisco, the Wharf, all of that. And then, oh, by the way, the game itself. And Auburn sold out its allotment of tickets, which was 5,000. I'm told that the Northern California Auburn folks bought their tickets in a group from Cal themselves, or itself. I'll bet there was at least 10,000 Auburn people there.
It sure looked like it, and you could tell. I mean, the noise that the Auburn fans made.
The southeast corner was the official Auburn designated spot with the band and cheerleaders and all the – it was a sea of orange, mostly orange, some blue. But there were Auburn fans scattered throughout the stadium for the game. So it was – I think Cal was not taken aback, but perhaps surprised. There were that many Auburn people. Dave Marsh was on our pregame show.
Sure, I heard that.
And he said he had – tons of people recognize him in Berkeley, and they were all Auburn people. The folks at Cal didn't, and he's right now an associate head coach with Dave Durden, who was also on his staff here at Auburn. So he said, folks at Cal have no idea who he was, but the Auburn folks sure knew who he was.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, those opportunities don't come along very often. And I mean, it's great to be able to get away, to do something like that. And, oh, by the way, get a win. And it sure, that was a tough one. It looked for a long, long time like it might not come about.
Yeah, and listen, we all know about Auburn's struggles offensively in the game. But Auburn put together one drive when it absolutely had to. And Peyton Thorne was really good during that drive. Now, there were other times that Peyton wasn't as good. The four fumbles killed Auburn in the game, and including Peyton on the third play of the game.
Oh, yeah.
And two others really killed Auburn drives as well. And then one gives Cal a golden opportunity for its final drive of the game. And the defense, again, just came up big, and Auburn finally gets the pick in the end zone by DJ James. And then the offense gets the one first down
that it needed,
and then they – after Cal used all of his timeouts, so you take an E three times and you celebrate a win.
No kidding.
And you fly back all night long.
Well, much better coming back after a win. That would have been the an interminably long, miserable trip home had Auburn lost.
But it didn't.
No. No, thank goodness. Yep. And now, as uncomfortable or in the coach's eyes, underperforming as Auburn was, it is much easier to teach. It's much easier to grasp when you nearly lose, but when you win, you then realize, well, we were that close. by doing all these things if we clean those things up. And Auburn was, that's the thing, Auburn was so clean in the first game. I mean, the penalties that you didn't, Auburn only had four penalties and no turnovers in the first game.
Yeah. You had an idea on that third play of the game when Peyton turned it over, and originally it looked like it was going to be a scoop and score. And you're like, holy cow, here we go. And Auburn caught a break because they called the play dead. So instead of a scoop and score, it becomes, you know, just
a dead ball turnover.
And Cal gets it. Listen, Michael Luckhurst, their kicker, who's the son of Mick Luckhurst.
Oh, yeah.
The former Falcons guy. Yeah. He was only 1 for 3 at North Texas in field goal attempts. And the coach was asked about it. Do you still have confidence in your kicker? My guess is he was asked about it again after game 2.
You think so? Well, I mean, the young man drilled the 51-yarder.
With plenty to spare.
And the penalty calls it back. And
after
that, he really struggled.
Yeah. So Auburn caught a couple breaks. Auburn gave Cal some breaks. And in the end, Auburn comes out with a win. Now, does it have things to work on offensively? No question about that. Execution offensively is an enormous part. But here's the thing that struck me as I was just kind of going over the game the last couple of days. And my first line of what's going on is my wife, as you know. Jan's going to ask me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Auburn wins. Did it play well offensively? No, not particularly well. I think the word awful was used by the head coach with the meeting with us yesterday. Let's be real honest here. There's going to be some times this year where it's going to be a little tough for this Auburn team.
Oh, it's going to be tougher.
Right.
I mean, the competition's going to get tougher.
Some of the
down the stretch.
Some of the reaction that I'm hearing is surprise that there are some struggles.
Oh,
at this point, okay.
Because you put up 59 in the first game.
Oh, okay, exactly.
Maybe. I guess.
And I think some of that has to do with the momentum and the enthusiasm and everything.
Everything
from the summer
had gone so well.
Sure. So anyway, listen, I'm glad to get a win for this team coming out of there. The win of the night was Auburn at Cal. The amount of Auburn people that were there and the support that this team had on the West Coast. Don't think we're going back to the West Coast anytime soon.
I wouldn't think. If there's any way around it, no.
Right. So
UCLA's on the schedule in 4 years.
Yeah,
right?
Well.
That's four years from now.
That was also done before UCLA joined the Big Ten.
And before the SEC was going to be adding two more teams, too. And I think probably going to a 9-game conference schedule.
I don't know anything about future schedules and what if those games are. But I wouldn't be surprised
Hugh
if there
Freeze
aren't some
has anything
changes.
To say about it. I don't think Auburn will be heading back.
Yes, yeah. I would agree with you, Bill.
We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. If you've got a question or comment for Andy, 334-321-1390 as we continue here on the Tuesday Drive.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill, Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and let's get to the phone line, 334-321-1390. And Mitch is up first. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. Bill, I'm going to take you up on anything you want to talk about sports-wise. Yesterday, I saw a video of some, some slurs and comments towards some Texas players in Tuscaloosa that really upset me. And, I mean, have the Alabama fans gotten so – some, not all. Has it gotten so spoiled that they're going to, you know, throw racial and homophobic slurs to opposing players?
Some fans, I mean, there you can find some fans that will stoop to very low levels when they have a little help perhaps from some intoxicants, and their team isn't doing well. And it's sad, but yeah, I mean, it is a shame, but it is also probably not the most shocking thing that you've ever heard.
Oh, no, it's not. It's just, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it was coming from the student section, which, I mean, I could understand that. But, I mean, I have seen some older fans, you know, show their backside before. But I think it was an SI article that I saw it in. But maybe something that they use against Alabama when it comes to recruiting. Because, I mean, they
all have. Right, anything like that can and will be. You can count on that.
Yeah. So, it's just sad. I was in the military for 26 years and worked with all kinds of different people from all over the country. Still got good friends from all over the country, and it's just sad when a football game makes you, you know, stoop to that level because, you know, you're losing and they're celebrating on the sidelines, which you've been doing for what, 15 years with Nick Saban? I mean, he's what, 47-2? At home against non-conference opponents? I mean, really?
Yeah.
So.
It is a shame. Anything else, Mitch?
No, that's all I had. Oh, wait. Oh, I do have one thing.
All right.
I want to say happy birthday to my wife today.
Well, hopefully you find, you know, hopefully this works, but I would advise you to do it in another way as well. Do it personally if you can.
Oh, well, I've already said that.
Oh, okay. Good. I just wanted to make sure you were going to say, well, honey, I said it on the radio a while ago.
Like, no. And she's talked to you before.
I know. I'm just giving you a
little flight. Today is her birthday, and I just wanted to give a shout out.
Well, that's great. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to my wife, Becca. All right, guys.
All right, Mitch. Good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. Spectre is up next. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, Bill. Andy.
Hello, Spectre.
Hey, listen, Andy, I don't know what you've done, but you have gotten more comfortable in your announcing this year than you have in the past. But I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you listening, Spector.
Yeah, but listen, I need to ask you something. I've been talking to Bill about this for years, about the Auburn Football Review. I guess it's a dead horse now, right?
It's a different horse, Spector. It is more of a behind-the-scenes look, and it airs later in the week now. And there's more interviews with players following a game, not necessarily in the locker room like it was before.
I noticed some in the locker room, right. and then there are
more sit-downs.
Some one-on-ones.
Exactly, that they're using. And so it starts now on Thursdays. Starts, I think, on Bally's on Thursdays, and then it eventually – makes it to YouTube as well.
Yeah, that's where I found it last week and was the easiest, I figured, for me to be able to find it. A lot of different television stations, TV stations will carry it,
right,
but at different times. So if you have internet access, the easiest thing to do is I found it last Friday on YouTube.
Right.
Okay, great. You know, speaking of that, I go back to Shug Jordan when he was doing it, and I miss the coach taking the film and showing what went wrong on a certain play. And that's what I miss most. Pat Dye did it also.
Mm-hmm.
The
thing is, to be honest, Specter, the audiences now it's geared to younger audiences that may not be as interested in every single play. I loved it too. I mean, you had the one-hour shows. Both Auburn and Alabama had one-hour shows back-to-back. In the day, and you'd see pretty much every play, so you wouldn't miss anything. But that's just it's tougher to try to produce an hour show. It takes a little longer than that to try to get things all put together and have it ready. But again, the audiences have changed a little bit. They're not geared for you and me.
Not only that, and I'm not sure exactly what went into this decision for this, guys. We're also in a day and age. I mean, listen, when Coach Jordan was doing it, and when Coach Dye was doing it for the most part through his tenure.
Oh, gee, until
you know, there might be one or two games that you might have on TV through the year, maybe a little bit more, but not many. And now every game is on,
and everybody can DVR or record every game.
We're in a much different age of accessibility to the games from a TV, DVR, just experience to be able to watch it at home than we did certainly when Coach Jordan and Carl Stevens were doing that show. Mm-hmm. And so
you're so right, Andy.
Thank you. It's just a much different time now.
Yeah, I agree with you, everything you said there, but I just missed that.
I understand. It was very informative and sometimes entertaining to hear the coaches comment on certain plays and in the middle of a play and things like that. Yeah, I did miss that too.
Yeah, now we do it on the radio with Bill and Dan.
Yeah, sure. That's right.
Yeah, you didn't have Bill and Dan back then either.
Well, you had Bill back then, but
not with Coach Jordan.
No, you're right. I tell you, yeah, one thing. Appreciate the call, Spector. Like something I wasn't able to do. I mean, when you walked in here, I've got the game on the last couple of minutes, so I can see exactly who's in the game.
Right.
You couldn't do that.
No.
You know, you didn't have that. And boy, if you had a VCR, you know, back in the day, it still was really tough to try to go back and do that. Now it's no problem. I'm just sitting here. Every game is available. I can back things up. You can watch the whole game itself. 334-321-1390. We'll get to a Cameron before we get to our final break of the hour. Hey, Cameron.
Hey, guys. How are we doing today?
Doing fine.
Yeah, just I'll be real quick. Kind of want to get Andy's thoughts on the play of Eugene Asante last Saturday. Ooh. and if y'all think he's kind of the de facto starting linebacker for the foreseeable future with all the injuries that we've gotten so far. And I'll just hang up with him. Thanks, guys.
I think not only is he is the starting linebacker right now, and I hope for Auburn's sake and certainly for Eugene's sake that as many plays as he's playing and how incredibly effective he's been his first 2 weeks, that continues for Eugene and Auburn. But I think he's also become one of the leaders on this team, not just the defense, on this team. And I love it when a guy with the character of a Eugene Asante starts to shine like he has done in the first 2 weeks. And as you mentioned at the top of the show, Bill, that's a spot for Auburn that was thin going into the season, has become thinner with the loss of Austin Keys, and we don't know how long he's out. The fact that he's had surgery concerns me about how quickly they will get him back, even for a guy at linebacker that has a thumb injury. And then what is the extent of Larry Nixon's injury? And Coach Freeze was not – he did not want to talk about injuries yesterday, so – As Dan mentioned, I think a lot of guys are out there at that viewing window right now saying, all right, is he here?
Right.
Is he not at that
point?
We
haven't seen Nehemiah Pritchett yet.
No. But think about the plays that Eugene made for Auburn down the stretch. How many times did we see number 9 at the point of a
big play?
Exactly. Thankfully. And let me say one more. I thought Elijah McAllister, of the two games he's played, had his best game, and it was terrific to see Jalen McLeod in there and making a difference at Auburn at that defensive end spot, or that Jack linebacker spot as well. And in the middle, I also like the way that Marcus Harris played in the middle,
yes,
Bill.
Yes, absolutely.
I thought he plugged things up. I was impressed. I was impressed with the way Jackson threw the ball for Cal. The running quarterback's got a pretty good arm.
Yeah.
But Auburn finally was able to, especially on that last drive, I thought did a good job of taking the pass away. And yes, was Ott out of the game by this point? He was. But I was inspired by the way Auburn played defensively. Now, you don't want to have to rely on that defense time and time again like that for the rest of this season, because you've got some big boys coming up.
No question about it. Appreciate the call, Cameron. 334-321-1390. We need to get to our final break. Back with a couple of more calls and one more segment with Andy Burcham here on the Tuesday Drive.
Attention large property owners and adventure seekers. If you're looking for a reliable and powerful off-road vehicle, check out the full lineup of Landmaster UTVs.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of hour number one. Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, here along with Bill. And let's get right back to the phones. James is next. Hey, James.
Hey, guys. I didn't know I was going to be on the phone with Andy, but I appreciate it. I'm sorry if I came off a little cross yesterday, Bill. I was kind of upset yesterday, but I really want to talk to y'all about, is it just me, or does it seem that the officiating keeps getting worse every year? I'm confused.
I don't know. I thought they did a pretty good job. I think, you know, you hate all the breaks and how long it makes the game and everything, but I thought they got the reviews right.
Yeah, it just seems like, and I'm not talking about just the Auburn game. I'm talking about, like, as a whole. It just seems like SEC officiating, I don't know, it has its good days and bad days. That's true. A little bit more consistent.
Andy, I think one of the things, it's tougher and tougher because physically the athletes are getting bigger and stronger and faster. And I mean, I think officials do a pretty darn good job. But I mean, it's tough sometimes when you're dealing with so many big bodies moving so fast.
Yeah, and that's not changing either.
No,
you know, they're going to continue to get bigger and faster and. It is a tough spot to be in, and it's also a spot that is much more – everybody's seeing it now.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what
it's
I mean?
It's much more visible.
Yes, it is. I would not want to be one of those folks.
No.
And I understand.
Everybody knows when you miss one.
Yeah, exactly.
And thinks a lot of times that you missed others, even if you didn't.
I'll be honest. I thought at least two of the fumbles when that happened – and they were reviewing, and I thought, well, they're not going to turn this over. And then you take a look at the replay, and it became very clear that
they had to.
Exactly.
We'll get one more before we run out of time. Terry is next. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Andy.
Hi, Terry.
Hey, Andy. I want to ask you a question about the fumbling. Is that something to be concerned about in the future? Or was California doing something different, like putting their hat on the ball?
I don't think so. I just think it was a bad night for Auburn to hold on to the football. I didn't see a lot of poor form.
No, I didn't either.
You know, the Peyton, other than perhaps right. the very first fumble of the ball game, but beyond that, it was one of those nights, unfortunately, and it can't continue for Auburn.
No, that has to be a focus, I'm sure, this week. That and the penalties. You just can't keep shooting yourself in the foot.
Exactly.
All right, Sam.
I'm not a fan of the two quarterback system. I hope they'll let momentum take over and keep Peyton Thorne in there. Do you think that's a possibility?
I think anything at this point is a possibility, but listening to Coach Freeze yesterday, I don't think we're going to see just Peyton Thorne only or Robbie Ashford only in a game anytime soon.
No, I think they'd like more sustained drives, and that's something Auburn just couldn't do. Terry, we're about out of time.
And how much the fumbles took away from some drives for Auburn,
you're
too.
Right, because Auburn ran the ball pretty well.
Exactly.
But they just couldn't keep things going. Yeah. Andy Samford coming up. Homecoming here in the middle of September.
You remember homecoming?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
No, but I mean, when you've been to the West Coast,
yeah,
it's definitely homecoming.
Very good point.
But
it
I mean,
certainly is.
Auburn's going to face a Samford team that, I mean, they'll come in again. They will do everything they can.
Among our guests, speaking of homecoming, the homecoming court will join us. Liston Eddins is going to join us, and we believe we're going to have Ben Obamanu on the show for homecoming on Saturday.
That'll be great.
So we'll follow game day. Starting at 3, ours will start at 3:00
That's
on
great.
Saturday.
Looking forward to
Me
it.
Too.
And game day on Wings starts at 2 on Wings 94.3. Andy, thanks again for coming in.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate it.
You bet.
All right, we're back with hour number 2. We'll get a report from Dan over at practice. Run some Eugene Asante audio from yesterday if we get a chance, and your calls.
Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell Dewitt.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Our thanks to Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, stopping in for the majority of hour number one. Really had so many calls, didn't really get a chance to. I wanted him, you know, he was mentioning some of the guests coming up, the guests on Tiger Talk, which, of course, you can hear on Wings 94.3 at 6 o'clock on Thursday. We talked a good bit about Eugene Asante and, of course, Rivaldo Fairweather had the game-winning touchdown catch. Those players will be on. So that, of course, is coming up Thursday. Right now, it's Bill here in the studio with Drew. Dan is over watching some of practice. Another media viewing window available today. So Dan will be checking in when that is done. And I think right now one of the concerns is just, you know, who does Auburn have available? I mean, just because a player isn't out there today, though, doesn't mean they won't be available a little later on this week. Auburn with Samford for homecoming this Saturday. So, you know, you really hope that Auburn can get things taken care of, take care of business, win. You'd love to win comfortably, rest, and get as many folks healthy as possible before the next road trip out to Texas to play Texas A&M on the 23rd. We'd love for you to join in here while we've got some time. We're going to play the Eugene Asante audio. He met with the media yesterday after Coach Freeze. We'll run that if we get a chance, but your calls come first. And the number to get you through is 334-321-1390. You can also text us on the Drive text box, which is sponsored by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, and that number is 334-564-1840. Let's go ahead and get to the phones, and Greg gets us started this hour. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Bill. How you doing today, bud?
Doing pretty good.
Yeah, well, we're getting a little rain today around here.
Oh, yeah? Where? Look, I just see sunny skies here.
Well, we down here in Flaunton, Alabama. We've been dry as a dust bowl, but we got a little bit of rain. I don't know how much, it ain't raining so long this puddles up right now, but we'll take what we can get. It ain't 100.
Oh, that clay gets hard and dries up quick.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I know that well.
No, I sat around there and listened to yesterday, and I paid attention to Twitter, everybody I follow on there, and everybody kind of overreacting about some things, and I'm just sitting there wondering if we all watching the same game. I wasn't as pleased, I don't think anybody thought that was going to be the outcome, but I'm going to make a couple points right here, if you don't mind.
No, sure, go ahead.
People need to understand, this is a rebuild year. I mean, I've seen everything from we're a playmaking quarterback away from a national championship. Look here, we got to just get realistic, you guys. This is a complete rebuild. You got over 40-something players on this team that wasn't there last year. And you're trying to figure out everything. Everybody's trying to find one another. And what I've seen out now, these boys didn't have no quit in them. I mean, and that's something that, the past 2 years that we've watched, and it's been hard to watch. But the other night when I watched, them kids right there, they look like some young men, excuse me. They didn't give up on one another. It was just a sloppy game. It was a sloppy game on both sides of the ball for both teams. But the defense stepped up and they won us a ball game. And the way it's been for us the past couple of years, I'm gonna take it. I'll take a win. Yeah, we got some things to clean up, but I found myself at moments in that game noticing, when Auburn was running the ball, they start getting something going, and it's a penalty or it's a fumble, something that kills it. So you're taking away drives, and then that fluke play by Thorne, he just pretty much hands the ball to somebody. Yeah, they blow the play dead, but they can say, well, what if they should have scored there? Well, you know what? They never should have got the daggum ball. Four turnovers, and was it 2-65 1-65 before that?
Yeah, for the last 5 years, it had been 1-65 for teams that had 4 turnovers and 230 or less yards and less than 15 first downs.
Well, you know what? I'll dang take it. Because I don't know how many, Bill, you probably can help me out here. I thought I might have heard something like 4 possessions in the second half, mm-hmm. and you won the ball game. People need to understand this team fault, and they got some things to clear up. They got some good film. But I am interested to see how we handle the quarterback situation.
Yeah, Hugh said he wasn't happy with the way with the way it was this past Saturday. I don't know. You know how much how you know differently it will look. I think what they'd like to do is feel like they're going to be able to move the ball consistently, and then decide you know at what point they make changes.
Well, I'm gonna say this. You know, this is just my opinion. Throwing to your starter, he's been named the captain on this team. But you know, I'll just kind of say what I'm seeing. You know, if you can't take hard coaching and you shook a little bit, son, you ain't even got to play LSU, Georgia, Alabama, Texas A&M coming up, which I ain't scared of A&M. I hope to goodness I'll get into that later another day maybe. But
yeah, we'll save that for next week.
You're in the SEC. So, I mean, look, you get your chances, that's fine. But the musical chairs, the quarterback, I think it needs to be handled better. I think everybody does. I think Freeze does. But if you're going to be pulling them in and out, at least know what the dang play you're going to run. And, you know, it's a lot of things I think the coaches, like I said, are trying to find themselves. And it's a lot of new pieces. And I think Freeze is committed to trying to get that right. And it certainly sounds so. And I like how straightforward he is about some things. You ain't always got a lot to head coach, but you can't expect him in the day because he's the one that's got to make a hard decision. But I say this in the same sense. If you think you can't leave Robbie off the field, when does that teeter into the point where you're hurting Thorne when he can't get consistent about it? I mean, if you're wanting to run a read option with him and run somebody, use a jet sweep, use something. I mean, you got some awesome athletes at running back. Put them over in the slot. Bring them through. Get a little creative, but get some consistency at the quarterback. To me, is just it needs to be handled a little bit better. But
it's
I'm
critical.
Not a head coach. But hey, I'm gonna hang up, listen to y'all, bud. I just wanted to call and tell everybody to calm down. It's a rebuild year, whether anybody wants to hear it or not. We'd be 7-8 wins this year, and let's build off of that. Let's get behind this team, and let's not be unrealistic fans. Hey, War Eagle guys,
appreciate it, Greg. Take care down in L.A. All right, and the thing. Every team, I mean, there are many, many teams that have, and there's no question I agree, it is a rebuilding year. And you've got 40-plus players that weren't on this team that were up on their first road trip together as well. But they came out with a win. And we've seen seasons that turned out a lot better than anyone expected if you win some of these ugly games. You're going to – no team is going to go through and play as well as they can every game. The key is when you don't, to still figure out a way to win, and Auburn did on Saturday. Now, they've got to play a whole lot better than that coming up very soon. I don't know that they'd have to play perfect to beat Samford by any means, but you want to be playing better before you get that Texas A&M, Georgia, LSU, Ole Miss quartet in a row. 334-321-1390. Back to the phone we go, and John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. I was going to try to catch Andy while I was there. I was going to ask him after making that trek to the West Coast and seeing all the logistics and getting the band and the fans and all the equipment and stuff out there. I was going to ask him what he thought that was going to do to Cal and Stanford joining the ACC and having to make that trip every other week for a road game.
I can't imagine the thought of doing that. Just having two teams that are so far away from that are 2,500 plus miles away from everybody else in your conference.
That's insane.
Imagine it for a lot of the other sports, not just a one time a year deal in football, but you know, in baseball and in basketball. I mean, it's I really don't understand how this is going to work with those two teams scheduling other teams across the country. I just don't know.
And then your players are going to constantly be off sync with the coming and going and time zones on a repetitive basis. But I was just curious about that.
I wonder if, and I don't guess you'd do it for football, but maybe for the other sports you may have to do, you know, road trips where you stay on one coast for at least a couple of series or a couple of games. To, you know, I guess teams coming from the east to the west, there are only two that you'd stay out there for. But the ones going from the west to the east, I mean, would you stay away from campus for a couple of weeks?
Yeah, that's defeating the whole point of being a student athlete.
That's exactly right.
But, one other thing I was going to ask you, did you happen to see Coach Harsin's daughter fire back on Twitter?
The comments about Eugene?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of crazy for her to – you would think you'd let sleeping dogs lie and just
– No kidding. They were probably celebrating the Auburn loss prematurely, and then when it didn't happen, they had to say something. But I thought Eugene handled it extremely well, pointing out that he requested to go to the scout team because he wasn't getting playing time and he wanted to get better.
That's right. All right. Well, I appreciate your time. Y'all have a good afternoon.
Appreciate the call, John. We'll get one more here before our first break. Who do we have up next? Keith is next. Hey, Keith.
Hey, yeah, I was just wanting to get comments on who is the practice police over. You know, I know that they have changed the rules and they keep squeezing you how much you can go in pads and all that kind of stuff because, you know, things that I've noticed over the years, you know, especially in 2020, the COVID year, I know that a lot of the teams look like they didn't practice at all, you know, like Penn State and maybe a lot of the SEC teams, but it looked like Alabama didn't miss a practice that year. And
that was probably as dominant a year as we've ever seen from Alabama.
Yeah, but you know, I just still don't believe it was a true. You know, I mean, they probably were that good, even so. But I mean, it was pretty obvious that a lot of these teams didn't know what to do with all the rules and stuff. And you know, one thing that's caught my eye this year, I mean, it may not be anything to it, but, you know, like the Utah quarterback, second-string quarterback, you know, they showed his team picture, and he looked like he just walked out of Britain or Scotland or somewhere, you know. I mean, but when he was on the field, he looked like he was a Hawaiian or something, like a foreigner. And I was saying, doggone, he's either spent a lot of time on the beach or he spent a lot of time on the practice field. And he played like he spent a lot of time on the practice field. But I just know how big of an advantage it is if, you know, if one team gets to sneak in an extra 4 or 5 hours or whatever, you know, it makes a lot of difference in coaching.
Oh, I'm sure it would. And I really don't know the answer to that. I'm sure you have to log and report every day what you're doing because you are limited time-wise. So that's a good question. I don't know exactly how that works.
Okay, well, if you find out, let us know.
Yeah, it's a good question. That's a good question for us to check on sometime. 334-321-1390. We'll get to our first break here of hour number two. If we get a chance, we'll run some audio from Eugene Asante, the SEC Defensive Player of one of the SEC Defensive Players of the Week. Of course, we'd love for you to join in as well, and we'll be hearing from Dan as we move on here in hour number two of The Drive.
Going into halftime and talking to the coaches and them trying to, like, breathe life into us was a really big thing for us. Just encouraging us that defense was doing well, getting that, like, stamp of approval from our coaches was a really big thing for us, and it really just uplifted us and lifted our spirits and telling us to continue to do what we're doing. Continue to execute the way we've been executing, and just you know, Coach Roberts and his staff had a really good plan. They did a lot of film study, a lot in dissecting our opponents. So I think it was just at halftime, just being around all the guys and them bringing us all together, and I think that was when it started to click a little bit.
For you individually?
Yes, sir. I think halftime, just being around the guys and everybody just looking, and you know, just you can look into somebody's eyes and they'd be like, man, we depend on you. So just being around all my teammates really just uplifted me, seeing them and them coming up to me, encouraging me. just really uplifted me, and I just wanted to go hard for them.
Eugene, you mentioned Coach Roberts and the staff. How much confidence have you guys as a defense grown in 2 weeks when you actually get into a game and the play calls and the adjustments they've had? How much confidence has that given you guys as players, the adjustments you've been able to make throughout a game?
Yeah, and Coach Roberts, he's a really smart coach. So all he does is in terms of our defense, he just passes that knowledge onto us and tries to make things as simple as possible. So that knowledge and ability to adjust on the fly is something we're continuing to build on. And I think that's something that I've seen the most from week one to week two. And, you know, with football, it's really an ongoing process. So I think we just have to continue to grow upon it, continue to hone in on our details. And ultimately, I think it would be really good for us. We just continue to build upon the foundation we set on Saturday. So.
Coach Roberts, the defense blitzes a lot. You've gotten home on a lot of your blitzes already this year. How much do you enjoy being in a defense like this where the linebackers and guys like Donovan and Keontae get to kind of get after the quarterback a little more?
Yeah, it's fun. Just being able to get downhill, blitz, do different types of things in coverage. It's kind of a linebacker, like we said, it's a linebacker-driven defense. You know, so it's just fun being out there, fun coming on blitzes, fun being in coverage. It's just there's not a dull moment in that defense. So I'm really grateful to have Coach Roberts. I'm really grateful for them implementing it the way they have and making it as simple as possible.
How tough is it to prepare for a team like Cal where you had the possibility to see two separate quarterbacks and for teams moving forward to prepare for a multiple quarterback system each Saturday?
It is real difficult. It's like, you know, especially with the Cal quarterback being really hurt, banged up. We didn't know what we were to expect. We didn't know if we were going to get 10 or we didn't know if we were going to get 5. So it's a really tough thing as a player, just not knowing what style of play quarterback you were going to get. So you really just have to, you know, hone in and practice and, you know, expect to see both of them. Prepare your mind that, you know, you might play a quarterback that is a little bit more mobile, dual threat type. So just being able to adjust on the fly, that's another thing we talk about, adjusting with personnel, and that's a really big thing.
Hi, Eugene. I know it's probably more fun to win in a dominant game, but in a game like this where it's so adverse and it's a grudge match until the end, what does that do for the team's confidence moving forward, knowing you can win even in an ugly game?
Yeah, I know there was a lot of things in terms of people were talking about offensively and stuff, but I really think it was a good thing for our defense to be in situations where they're challenged. You know, we had to, you know, we can say that we want to be a really good defense, but we have to be in situations where our back is against the wall and we have to put out the fire, you know. So those types of things really do uplift players, being in situations where the circumstances aren't necessarily right, just puts you in situations and it just lets you, builds that confidence within yourself. So you're like, yeah, I've been in a situation like this before. We've done it before, guys. We can do it. So that's really a morale thing. But I think that was really the biggest thing. Yeah.
Tell us about the final defensive stand of the game after it seems like maybe the work is done. There's a turnover. Defense has to go back to work. What's the mindset in that situation and how you guys came through it?
Biggest thing is just another opportunity. It's a chaotic thing, you know, it's turning a ball over, but it's just another opportunity to show what we can do and show who we believe we are. So that's the biggest thing, just, you know, I know turnovers aren't, you know, the best things, but it's just like, you know, going out there and embracing the challenge of having a turnover, embracing the challenge of the offense having another series, you know, just trying to do your best to put out the fire, so.
You made some comments about playing on scout team last year, yeah. and how good the feeling was this year. Can you talk about that and then talk about that sack at the end, the play that you made to kind of seal the game?
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to clear that up as well. So last year I was on scout team, but I was on scout team primarily because after the first 4 games, I wasn't playing at least as much as I thought I should. So I went to our coach at the time, and I said that I wanted to be on scout team. because I just wasn't playing as much as I thought I should. And I thought in that sense it would help me improve. So nobody put me on scout team. I wasn't put on scout team last year. I just wasn't playing as much as I felt I deserved. So ultimately it was a thing to try to improve upon myself. And I think those types of things, that situation being on scout team, if I didn't go through that, I feel like I wouldn't be in the situation I'm in today in terms of just, you know, that hunger and being, you know, just ready to go out there and show what I can do. So another thing in terms of what you were saying, scout team, just being out there, it's just like, it's really a motivational thing for me. It's just a thing that uplifts my spirit. Just, you know, I went against Tank Bigsby. I went against Jarquez Hunter. I went against all the guys that are really elite guys, in my opinion. So when I go out there and I face a running back, I'm like, I played against professionals. I played against guys that are going to be at that stage. So it's really a confidence thing for me. And football is really a confidence game. So that's where I really developed that.
Yeah, Eugene, I got a couple for you. Coach Freeze mentioned that Jalen McLeod, when he's on the field, he's a different dude out there. What does he bring to the defense when he is out there?
Yeah, J-Mac, he brings energy. He brings intensity. He's a really fun guy to be around. He's from Washington, D.C., and I'm from Virginia, Alexandria. So he's like 15 minutes from where I'm from. So, you know, we kind of got that connection. But he's one of those guys that's like a spark plug on the defense. You know, he gets guys going in terms of his motor. You know, seeing him at practice is like the biggest thing. It tries to make me go harder because I'm like, man, this dude J-Mac is behind me. He's bursting past people to get to the football. So I'm like, I got to bring that intensity and bring that level of competitiveness that, you know, that's the standard for our defense. So he sets a different standard in terms of his competitiveness. His pass rush ability is elite. You know, we've seen that on the big stage from where he was at App State. So he's just a complete football player. He's intentional about his work. He details his work. And he's just truly somebody I can really admire. Yeah.
And then the secondary, I know Nehemiah's been banged up in the game. DK and Keontae got banged up. Yeah. And Caleb Wood had to come in. Kai and Lee's played a bunch of snaps for you guys. What does it say about those young DBs being able to step up for you?
It just shows how talented we are in that room. And, you know, their coaches do a really great job. Coach
90, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan back from the media viewing window over at Auburn football practice. Drew at the controls, and let's head to the phones and welcome in our regular Tuesday afternoon guest. That is Jake Crane of Crane & Company. Jake, how you doing today?
Man, doing great, guys. Just excited for another weekend of what should be some exciting football.
Yeah, and, you know, the first 2 weeks have shown that, you know, nobody knows everything. We should all know that anyway. But a lot of those first game perceptions went up in flames this past week.
Well, look, at some point, you know this, Bill. I mean, you look back, and I think Hugh Freeze talked about the press conference today. There are some times in some games that you just got to survive. And look, mm-hmm. You look at the way the Pac-12 is playing right now. And they could very well end up having the best conference in college football at the end of the year and the greatest stroke of irony ever in the history of the game, considering they're dissolving after this season. But Cal, I think, is going to make a little more noise. And Justin Wilcox has to have it this year. You know, they're a wounded animal. I mean, he's fighting for his job. You bring in Jake Spavital, a guy from Texas State who is a very good offensive mind. And I tell you what, watching that game, I thought Cal had a good plan, and Auburn did some good things, but you can't turn the ball over. You can't have timely penalties. But to be able to win that game, that may be one we look back at the end of the year and say, whew, imagine if that one would have gone the other way.
What concerns you about what you saw from Auburn's performance Saturday night? They won the game. We can talk about the good as well, but where are your primary concerns after watching the team through 2 weeks?
Well, you know, Cal pretty much played man on the outside and loaded up the box and dared Auburn to throw the ball. And I thought there was a couple reads in the RPO game again this week that Peyton Thorne didn't do a very good job of working to the right side of the field. They had a couple shots down the field, a couple matchups that you'd like. I think, you know, So, man, you need to find a way to get the ball to Rivaldo more. That's for daggum sure when they're in man, and that'll open it up with the turnovers, right? That's what, you know, most teams in college football lose games. They don't win them. And when you turn the ball over, you put yourself and your team in a bad situation. You add that with the untimely penalties, and Auburn's got to mature as a team. But I think Peyton Thorne and Auburn in general, they've got to be a threat through the air. You know, you've got to find this pass game. Even on the Jay Fair touchdown, you know, you had the running back running a wheel route wide open. Cal actually busted that coverage. Now, Jay ended up scoring if you go back and look at it. But Peyton's got to be better. I thought the offensive line played better than it looked on TV if you don't really know how the numbers work in the box with the way Cal was playing it. But the quarterback has to be better. Both of them do.
Yeah, I mean, it was a game where you look at some of the numbers and Auburn ran the ball pretty well. They just either fumbled it or there were penalties that stopped drives, pushed them back and things like that. I think some people may have, you know, raised their eyebrows when Hugh Freeze said, you know, he felt like they could have run for 250 plus yards, but Cal wasn't really stopping the run. It was Auburn stopping themselves.
Yeah, and, you know, there was some, again, I mean, you Auburn went into that game wanting to bully Cal when Auburn was on offense. And then on defense, Auburn played two high safeties and was able to shut the run down just fine. They were able to bully him on defense. But offensively, every time Auburn would get some momentum, you would either have a turnover or you would have a penalty that puts you in predictable downs. If Auburn would have stayed on schedule, they would have been a lot better. But the pass game in that RPO situation, when teams say, okay, Auburn, you're going to have to throw it to beat us consistently, because that's coming down the road. Auburn's not going to be able to line up. And it looked like Auburn may have been struggling in the run game because they weren't popping off 30-yard runs or any huge runs. But that's not what it's really about. I mean, if you look at the yards per carry, Auburn was able to stay on schedule, but those third downs where you have the penalties or those predictable yardage and downs where it's like, all right, well, we had a penalty, so now it's 3rd and 11 and we got to throw it. Well, you're helping bail the defense out. So Auburn's got to clean up some things, but the pass game has really got to start to be a threat. And Peyton Thorne, look, I don't like the quarterback carousel the way it went against Cal. I don't think Hugh Freeze did either. He wanted to give the offense a spark, and I get it. But if Robbie Ashford's going to come in the game, there has to be some threat of throwing the ball, even if you bring him in the red zone in on 3rd and short. And we've seen Robbie be able to be a decent enough passer where defenses shouldn't just be able to hone in on one thing when he comes in the game. But Peyton Thorne has got to become an RPO connoisseur. I think Auburn needs to run a couple more RPOs. They're wanting a ton in that game when you go back and look at it. But here's the thing. You got the win. You went across the country. You were off your routine. You played late at night against a team out west. You never won a game in California. You're able to play bad on offense and still win the game. I think that says a lot about this team.
I remain convinced that the best version of this team is going to involve Peyton Thorne improving and not replacing Peyton Thorne with Robbie Ashford, based on what I've seen of the two guys. I know other people have other opinions about that, but I think it's about Peyton Thorne developing a rhythm. It's also about the receivers, who outside
big time about the receivers
outside of Fair and Johnson, it's hard. That's Javarius Johnson and Jay Fair. Outside of those two, Hugh Freeze, it sounds like the pressure is on the rest of those guys to contribute.
Yeah.
And it's not just about getting open. It's also about Bill. It's about playing through.
It's about run. Yeah, playing completely through the end of the play, and not appearing or letting it be known that you're not involved in the play. And it's also about blocking. I mean, there are other things that are involved. People don't want to hear that about receivers, but they've got to do that.
Well, look, if you're out here not giving effort during the game, you need to take that jersey off and go in the locker room and have your parents come pick you up outside the field house. This isn't high school, and even in most high schools, you wouldn't get away with it. You wouldn't for Spence McCracken when I played. So there's some growing up to do. But Camden Brown, you got to get off the back of a milk carton, man. Shane Hooks, I hear about all these one-handed catches in fall camp. How about you make some two-handed catches during the game and be somebody that is able to be effective at that size? And I'll say this, Rivaldo Fairweather, when he got his chances, he made the most of his opportunities. He made a great catch on the 3rd down. Great catch on the touchdown. The other time they threw him the ball, he got a pass interference. But there's got to be more people that come to the party, because this Auburn offensive line, I'm telling you, is good enough to do some things. You don't need all the receivers. You'd love for all of them to come in and be great. You just need a stable of them, and that includes the backs being able to catch the ball out of the backfield. And Jarquez Hunter, I know he's rusty, but you got to take care of the ball. That's an unacceptable fumble at the end of the game. You know, you had some things go on off the field. You had to sit game one. You need to figure it out, because you need to be a big part of this offense, or Damari Alston and that Jeremiah Cobb kid are about to snatch this position from you very quickly.
I'm buying all the Jeremiah Cobb stock that you got.
Sign me up for that kid.
And I, you know, I really thought, full confession, right? Like, I thought that Auburn was cooked after the Jarquez fumble. Because you can only ask your defense to make so many stops, and I've seen that play cost teams games so often. When the defense is starting to cool down because they feel like the game has been won and they've done enough, and all the offense has to do is run out the clock or get one more first down, a turnover there, it's hard to get that defense to go back out there and get one more stop. And Auburn's defense did it, and that's a compliment to those guys that they
I tell you what, Dan, that Auburn defense to me looked like they took week one personal. That's what it looked like to me. And that is one of the best signs when you have a group that can come together, and it's not like they played awful in week one, but there's a group of men that looked at each other and said, we're not going to be the reason. We're going to be the difference. And I think that that's a huge thing. Eugene Asante, you had guys that were out in the secondary. You had linebackers running around, filling gaps, hitting people. Defensive linemen getting off blocks. And it wasn't just one guy. There is nothing like being able to have a defense that will go on the field and say, you know what, whatever happens, you fumble it, you throw a pick, you have a penalty, you're not converting on third downs, we're going to get you the ball back and we believe in you. And I give a ton of credit to Ron Roberts and Zach Etheridge and those guys on that defensive staff being able to get that group together last week and say, you know what, we're going to take our performance personal. You always should, in my opinion, and run it at me, throw it at me, try and block me, because I swear to God you're not going to be able to do it. And that's what that defense looked like to me. They need to stay hungry, they need to stay angry, and they need to stay together with the offense. And if Auburn can do that, they can do some weird things this year in a good way.
Jake Crane of Crane & Company, our regular Tuesday afternoon guest here on The Drive. Well, Jake, Auburn still has, no matter what, no matter how ugly it was, Auburn has something that a lot of other SEC teams that have been playing other Power 5 schools have, and that's a win. Mississippi State was able to, in overtime, beat Arizona, but Alabama, Texas A&M add to the SEC's rough start against other Power 5 teams.
Yeah, and look, is the SEC down this year a little bit compared to where it has been? Yes, that's what happens when you have that cornerback turnover, and they've dominated for so long on the field. You kind of felt like a year like this was coming eventually, right? I guarantee you they still have the most players drafted when it comes to the NFL draft, but you had major changes at the quarterback position, especially at the top. But I do think we're seeing something in the transfer portal where the rich are always going to get richer. But I think it's raised the floor out of a lot of these middle ground Power 5 teams and Group of 5 teams, being able to supplement their roster with experienced guys that have played at a higher level or at a bigger place in a bigger conference, being able to come in and kind of fill some of those gaps where that drop-off might have been. So the Pac-12 looks really strong. If Clemson hadn't looked as bad as they'd look, the ACC would have a lot to say. I think the Big Ten East is strong and the West is a disaster. And the Big 12, when you look at what Texas is doing and a couple other teams in that conference, Kansas State, I still think Texas Tech is a quality ball club. I think it's great for college football. And I love the SEC as much as anybody. I was born in the state of Alabama. I will always be a big SEC fan, but I'm a college football fan first. And I think this is great for the game.
Let's stay in the state of Texas for a little while, because I thought there were two really interesting. I mean, Oregon, Texas Tech, also an interesting football game, but the two involving SEC teams. First, Jimbo Fisher feeling the pressure after a surprising loss to Miami. I thought Miami's quarterback was the story of that game, but Jimbo Fisher a costly loss before conference play gets going in a pivotal year for A&M's coach?
Yeah, look, I think, and we've watched A&M, right? And typically when we've watched them lose, they've looked inept almost in every phase, and they've looked bad. I think that loss was a lot more about Miami than it was about Texas A&M. Tyler Van Dyke is healthy, number one. Miami's got 6-7 NFL players on that defense, by the way. They got some guys that are going to be playing on Sunday. Then that offensive line is built a lot more in Mario Cristobal's image and who they want to be. I was shocked that it was the passing game that got Miami where they needed to go. I would have thought it had been the run game and then trying to lean on A&M a little bit and more play action than it was straight drop back. But A&M, if I'm an A&M fan, I still wouldn't panic because I'm looking around the SEC and it looks as wide open as it has been in a while. And nothing can fix an early year. Going that loss at Miami, it's gonna start looking better and better and better as the year goes. But nothing fixes an early season loss like beating Alabama at home. And I think A&M, I predicted they were going to do it before the year. You look at Jalen Milroe, kind of a square peg in a round hole on that offense. Alabama can't get to the quarterback right now. I would not be shocked if A&M was able to turn it around. I had them going around 8-4, 9-3. I still think that's where they're going to end up.
Well, the thing is, you look around the SEC and go, how many SEC quarterbacks are going to be able to do what Miami did?
Yeah, no, let's be honest. I think A&M's got a pretty good quarterback, too. I think the Wegman kid, you know, the one interception, the receiver fell down. But if you watch that game, he kept him in it by making some pretty big-time throws, especially on the move. So I don't think the offense is a flaming dumpster fire falling from the sky like it was. I was surprised at the lack of physicality on defense. Mm-hmm. I think A&M was as shocked as anybody that Miami just got in a straight drop back and started picking them apart. But Jimbo Fisher needs to stop coming out and blaming it on the grass or, you know, UFO invasions or climate change or whatever the heck he's blaming it on this week. They just need to regroup, get it together, and go out and play ball because they do have a talented team.
Yeah, it's like when the weatherman gets it wrong, it was because of the jet stream, right? Like, whenever.
Oh, yeah. Like, Jimbo's like, well, you guys know I'm a Scorpio, and the moon was in a half crescent phase, so we didn't play good on defense.
There's a jet stream of something coming out of A&M if they don't turn it around. All right, so.
What about this week?
Well, that's a big one this week. Well, do you want to get some Bama, Texas thoughts? Briefly, because I know that's a game, Jake, that you sure. have to have had some reaction to.
Yeah, I mean, called it. I've been calling it since the offseason. I had Texas going undefeated and making the college football playoff because sometimes you got to take the brand name off the team and look at the personnel. That's why I'm not one of these trends guys. Oh, well, in 2009, you know, they did this and haven't done it since then. Every team is different. Every circumstance is different. And when you look at Alabama, there was a lot of unknowns because there's a lot of moving parts. Two new coordinators. You're transitioning to a new offense. You went and grabbed an okay quarterback out of the portal, which let me know you didn't feel great about your group. There's a reason nobody came in and replaced Jalen Milroe. I don't think they feel confident in their backups. What I don't understand from Alabama is how you're making this transition back to bully ball, drop back, three-step, five-step drop offense. You watch Jalen Milroe in fall camp, who decides where he's going to throw the ball before the ball snaps, yet you stay with that style and you don't tweak it to fit him. You're in the middle of a transition philosophically on offense. You have got to be able to adjust to the personnel that you have. Early, it looked like Alabama was running 2013 Nick Marshall, Auburn's offense. But then they got back and tried to make Jalen Milroe look like he's, you know, Jared Goff in a three-step and five-step drop, and he's not reading anything. Some actors are better improvising. Some are better on script. Jalen Milroe needs to move the pocket, zone read, RPO-style system to be able to get them going because he does a pretty good deep ball. He's got decent touch. He just still doesn't know what he's looking at when he drops back.
Jake, three SEC matchups this weekend with LSU, Mississippi State, Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, Tennessee. Which intrigue you the most? What do you see anything unusual happening? Any upsets?
Yeah, well, I don't think South Carolina can score more than 10 points if you put blindfolds on Georgia's defense with that offensive line this weekend. So that one, I would throw that one to the side. I tell you, man, The Missouri-Kansas State game, I think, is going to be a little bit tighter than what people think. Mm-hmm. Missouri's defense is a little underrated. They played it very close to the vest last week. And also some very interesting fourth down decisions that I didn't understand why Eli did some of the things that he did. So don't be shocked if Missouri's able to find a way to win that one. But the more I look at this Florida Tennessee game, man, it just smells funny to me, guys. We opened the show on Crandon Company. I was talking about Joe Milton. He's the same Joe Milton. He can throw the ball 90 yards at the Manning Passing Academy and hit a Gatorade bottle off the back of a golf cart, but he can't throw the dig. He can't throw the slant consistently, and he still misses high and has no touch. And I feel like he's going to keep Florida in this game. But Tennessee's upgraded on the offensive and defensive line. I don't think enough people talk about that. I think it's going to be a close game, and Tennessee wins, but Florida covers. But I would not be shocked at all if Billy and them find a way to sneak one out down in the swamp.
That would be huge for them.
Because these two programs are going in opposite directions right now.
What are you thinking about LSU Mississippi State before we let you go, Jake?
Man, you know, Mississippi State, you can tell they have a defensive head coach now. They threw it 17 times last week. But LSU's got Mason Smith back. They got Wingo. I don't think Mississippi State's going to be able to run it. I think LSU wins. I saw the spread at 9.5, but I think this is going to be a low scoring 20 to 13 type game, maybe 23 to 17 type game. I like LSU, but if they don't start pushing the ball down the field like they did after the halfway point of last year, LSU is going to continue to struggle on offense. I don't care who's at quarterback.
Great stuff as always, Jake. Let everybody know what's coming up and how, of course, they can catch it all.
Yeah, if you want to see some fireworks, we got Tim Brando coming on the show tomorrow, and he said a lot of stuff about Texas before the season, so that's going to be fun. We're live every weekday morning, 6:30 to 8 a.m. Central on YouTube. Type in Crane and Company, C-R-A-I-N and Company. If you can't catch it live, it stays on there. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We're talking everything college football and the NFL, so come chop it up with us.
Appreciate it, Jake. Always great to talk to you. Have a great rest of the week.
You guys as well. Enjoy the football watching.
Oh, no question. Jake Crane joining us as he does on Tuesdays. We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
You can help